is a lot of brands will sink decent amount of energy and money and design skills into a logo, into the look and feel of their website. But then when it comes to a video, they kind of just flake out. They don't think that this is important. And especially, you know, from what you teach live video, it might be the first time somebody sees you. It's might be the first point of awareness for your brand. And I'm just like, this ought to be great. This ought to be as good as you can make it so that it's that nice first impression. And so I'm not saying it has to be, you know, professionally made every time. It doesn't. I mean, with a decent phone and good lighting, you can make yourself look great. In fact, I'd rather have a great lighting package in an iPhone than a really expensive cinema camera with bad lighting.
Recorded live in Boston, Massachusetts, this is the Livestream Show. In a world full of underexposed entrepreneurs, the Livestream Show is your gateway to a global community of live stream pioneers who dare to go live and create something special and unexpected, which could only happen because it was live. I'm your host, Brad Powell. Let's get on with the show. And we are live, and welcome to the Livestream Show. Today, we've got an amazing guest and a cool, awesome topic. And I'm going to tell you the story of how this came about. The topic for today is eye hacking. And how this came to be was that a few weeks ago, I was over on LinkedIn and I posted this post. I said, if you have something that you could talk about passionately for 18 minutes and like without any notes and without any prep or anything, you just could hold forth and just let it all out, tell me what it is. And I got a number of comments, but one of the most intriguing was from our guest today, Paul Martin. And he basically responded just with the two words, eye hacking. And so I was like, what the heck is that? Like, I need to know this. So I said, hey, what is it? And then he was saying, well, it has to do with the way that cinematographers and videographers and filmmakers actually engage us while we're watching and sort of control where we're looking and keep us engaged entirely through the visual medium. And he has been diving down the rabbit hole of this technique for a number of years. I'm really excited to have him on, and you guys are in for a treat. We are going to learn all about eye hacking. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Hi, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, likewise. So let's just start really quickly. Tell us who you are and what do you do?
Well, my name is Paul Martin, and I have a little company. It's kind of a boutique agency, and we really specialize in video. And we try as much as we can to create that engagement and that buzz and all the things that people are looking for in video and digital marketing. And so that's what I do. I kind of got here from a roundabout way. And a lot of it started when I was in graduate school, and I started talking about and thinking through what engages people. And I was actually a music major. I was a jazz major in college. And then in graduate school, I was learning how to teach this. And I learned very quickly in the classroom that there's a difference between exchanging information with somebody and teaching them, which is more pedagogical, if you want to say it that way. So I just really kind of became a student of how do we engage people the most. And I never stopped. And I just kept doing as much research as I could. And this is where I ended up.
All right. So somewhere you pivoted from being a music guy to becoming a video guy, you know, so talk about that a little bit. Like, how did you fall in love with video?
Well, I've always been a visual person. I always loved video, and I loved movies, and I loved watching movies. And I started to notice that a lot of people kind of wanted to hear my thoughts about a movie or a show. And I would just pull out details that people weren't noticing. So I guess I'm probably kind of bent that way towards a visual learner. And then I dug into it, and I started getting into things more and more. I remember one of the first times I started really getting into this, I was watching Good Will Hunting, which is kind of an older movie. And I noticed that Robin Williams, who's a very physical actor in this one big pivotal scene, he's just sitting and he's planted. He's not moving at all. In fact, he's planted and he's got his fingers like TP'd up, you know, like fingertip to fingertip, and he's just sitting there. It was this huge scene. And then the next big pivotal scene for that movie, you may remember it. It was when they were describing him missing the World Series to meet his then future wife. And they totally redid the room. It's the only time the room appears in this configuration. And he's describing the home run that the guy hit at the World Series. And they rearranged the room that he's talking about it in to have a coffee table in the middle and four chairs. And so Will actually runs the bases as they're describing the home run. And it's just one of those implicit kind of messaging things that a lot of people probably don't get, but I picked up on, and I don't know, I was hooked from that moment on.
That's so great. Okay. So let's just explain that a little bit. Okay. So now this scene where he's just sitting still and he's got his hands like this, from the iHacker's perspective, you know, what is that doing? What's actually happening there?
Right. So, well, the scene, normally you expect Robin Williams to be, you know, he's all over the place and just kind of running around and doing his thing. It really makes you focus on him. And this was a role that was pretty pivotal for him. It kind of moved him from that very physical comedian to a more serious dramatic actor. And what happens is Will, the person he's counseling, is doing what Robin Williams would normally do as an actor. He's standing up, he's moving around the room, he's looking at different things, he's pulling from all these different sources. And what's happening, and a lot of people don't even get this, there's just a slight movement of the camera sideways. And it's so slow and so subtle, a lot of people don't get it. But what it does is it's like you're revolving around Robin Williams' character. So he is the center of attention, even though all these other things, it's like he's the sun and Will is this planet that's just kind of out of control. And what's hugely powerful about this scene is right at the end of it, Will finally gets under his skin and kind of pokes him, and he gets up and very calmly takes off his glasses and he grabs him by the throat and pins him up against the window. And it's this shot, it's an over the shoulder shot from Will to him, and he's seeing the reaction that Will finally got on his face. It's the only movement in the scene. And because you limit that, it's powerful. And at the time, what I was thinking is I had gone through all these jazz improv classes. So there's two things you need to know about improvising anything. You have to know your subject matter really well, and then you have to choose to self-limit. Otherwise, you just kind of try to say everything all at once. And you can't say everything because then you have to say everything else. So that's kind of where I lived in that space of just kind of understanding and trying to get my head wrapped around, why do people make the decisions to frame a shot the way they do? Why do they put movement in the way they do? And there are whole channels and communities on YouTube that where people just do this. They're breaking down a scene and figuring out what happened.
Yeah. So if we just step back for a moment, you know, when you use the term eye hacking, how do you define it? Like, how would you describe that world?
Yeah, so it goes beyond just what I was describing. A cinematographer may implicitly message something in a scene, like the bases and running the bases around the chairs and things like that. That's kind of just an implicit reinforcement of a message. But then we get into deep eye hacking, like psychology and neurology. And I think you have a video that we're going to play in just a minute, and it'll really kind of demonstrate. They use almost every trick you can, but it's really tapping into that limbic system and kind of the old brainstem, what some people call it, the reptile brain. And it kind of gets into the places that get our attention, that move us from not just seeing something, but being engaged with it. And probably the video will explain it better than I can explain it apart from that. So maybe now we can just play that clip.
Okay, let me just hook it up here. Here we go. And you can tell me when to stop.
It starts out and it flashes through probably 13 different scenes. So
at least,
and it's almost like, I mean, you almost need to warn people, hey, if you're prone to seizures, you know. So what that does, anytime something moves quickly, and this is probably from, you know, millennia of programming in our instincts and our brain, or, you know, however you want to call it. When we see something moving quickly, we naturally focus on it. So what this does is it gives us probably 13 scenes in about 2 seconds. And our eye is trying to orient itself and figure out what's in these scenes, right?
Mm-hmm.
The next clip is somebody running and the camera's just shaking all over the place. Every time you add movement into a scene, what happens is you have to orient yourself within the scene. And so it's making the brain try to orient itself within this scene. One of the next things they do is they show a building and it's kind of at what's called a Dutch angle. It's at a tilt, and it just keeps kind of orienting itself and it finally gets flat. That's two different eye hacking techniques. One of them is when you see something and it's not oriented the way you normally would see it, kind of like, oh, Captain, my Captain, when he stands on the desk and he says, you need to see things from a different perspective. Your eye can't help but try to orient itself within the scene. And it does quickly, but if it's moving like that, it hits the second eye hacking thing, which is anticipation. So many new videos are using this where somebody shows the process of something happened, a pet getting rescued from, you know, a drainage ditch, or, you know, somebody drawing something or making something. And you kind of almost have to force yourself to look away to move on from it. And a lot of people don't. It's a very engaging technique. You show something in process and you kind of want to see it completed. So you want to see the dog get rescued, or, you know, the drawing or painting get finished. And so that's another eye hacking thing. And that goes even deeper than just the eyes. It's in our brain wanting to kind of finish things. If you've followed music, Herr Mozart used to wake his son. There's a story about this, the way he used to wake his son. He'd go to the piano and he'd go, da 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 da, and he'd leave off that seventh note, and the son just couldn't take it. He had to come in there and finish the notes. So all these things are things that people are doing for eye hacking. Some people are doing it without even knowing. I mean, your little bumper intro there had footage, and it was kind of moving quickly through the footage, and it was sped up footage, so it's kind of a time lapse. Mm-hmm. And time lapses do a similar version of this. It's kind of like you're waiting for what's changing, for not what's staying static. So everybody's using this. It's just really a matter of how intentional you are.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, we see lots and lots of examples, particularly like all over YouTube, of editing done in really quick cuts. And I'm just curious, you were talking about how some of these things put us into lizard brain mindset instead of our more conscious, you know, frontal lobe. And so what is that doing? The extreme cases, like when we're watching any sort of super big action film in a theater, giant screen, we're in a dark space and all this stuff is happening. Are we in like fight or flight mode? What's going on there?
Well, it's all of that. And some of it's super intentional. Especially when you have a big screen, you're at the movie theater, you can actually use what people are using now for EMDR, which is kind of reprogramming your brain for trauma or PTSD. So a lot of people are using this as therapy now. But when you have a big screen, you can orient your head in one way, but then you're kind of looking at different areas of the screen. And when you look at these different places with your head oriented the same way, which a lot of times people aren't doing this in the movie theater, unless maybe it's one of those huge IMAXs, it reaches different parts of your brain. So, right. So, you know, looking up and to the left will access this part of your brain, you know, and looking up to the right will access this part of your brain. So, I mean, it can get really super deep. And in the movie theaters, they're definitely using it. I mean, you watch the latest, you know, Avengers movie, and they introduce a new person coming into the screen, and it's opposite of where the person who you were just facing was. So, you know, let's take Thanos and Captain America. Well, Thanos comes in from the right and he's moving left and he's got this open facing. And Captain America comes in from the left and he's moving right. It's already implying that there's opposition because they're facing each other. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, there's this conflict already. In another scene in Good Will Hunting, I love this movie, by the way. It uses a lot of these techniques. It's after they've had a standoff and they meet out at a park and they're both sitting on this park bench. And they're both facing the same direction. So now they're not facing each other like they were in the room. They're facing, you know, away from the bench and into, I think, a lake. But what happens is, as the scene goes on, they're reorienting and it's actually bringing them, it's like one of those shots that goes sideways and it's bringing them closer together as Robin Williams continues to talk. And eventually their faces are almost completely just lined up. And it's just one of those beautiful moments where it was very intentional, when they did that.
All right. So where else can we go in this particular rabbit hole? I mean, it seems like there's a really big distinction between, first of all, capturing attention with super fast action so that, you know, we all of a sudden we're going, what's, you know, like, we have to figure out what's going on here. It's the same as, you know, leaving out that extra note. It's like, okay, there's a whole bunch of things going here. My brain is absolutely trying to figure out what's happening, which is really different than some of these other scenes that you're describing, which are very calm, almost static, and really bringing kind of a laser focus to like one thing. My memory, I haven't seen Good Will Hunting in quite some time, but my memory of that was the two characters kind of play off of each other and against each other. I mean, Robin Williams, you've seen the, you know, you've seen the Matt Damon character do a number of things. Every time he goes to a therapist, he completely blows it up. Like, he blows up their relationship. He blows up basically everything that's happening in his life. And somehow the Will Robbins character hangs in there long enough to make for some kind of change. You know, that's the narrative arc. But what I'm wondering is, like, okay, what you're talking about is the visual arc of how they achieve some of these things, you know, how they make this happen. And I love the, I had forgotten about the scene of running the bases. That's great. I love that. And so I'm just wondering, like, what can you say more about, you know, okay, so there's a fast action thing that's going to grab my attention because I need to pay attention to what's going on here. Like, here's like this cut and then cut and then cut. It's making me look closer. And then at the same time, there's this complete opposite of, I've got to, here's a scene where something's happening that's really important and it's much longer, more static, and has this focused element to it. You know, what are, those are two very distinctive techniques. What other ones can you think of or bring up?
Both of those, it really depends on the context, because if you pay for a ticket and go to the movie theater, you're willing to sit there. So you're willing to sit through a slower paced scene. If you're watching something on, you know, Facebook or LinkedIn or YouTube or whatever, you're just kind of scrolling through, you have to really, that's when some of this becomes very important, because you need to grab that attention. The things that mentioned about that video that we watched, and we may just want to watch it again to get an idea for it, is the sound that they use in it.
Yeah, sure. Let's do it. Here we go.
So it starts out and it flashes through all these things, and there's actually a rising cymbal crash, like, so that's kind of bringing you in. And it has this really high impact music. And right where you cut it off at like 11 or 12 seconds, it has sirens kind of blaring. And so all of these things are things that alert us and, you know, kind of hit our amygdala and kind of flip it. And that's all what you want to do at the very beginning of a video, just to grab attention nowadays. So even with the sound turned off, you get the flashes. But if you have the sound turned on, wow, you know, now you're really over in stimulated in it. There's a lot you can do. And sound actually is one of the ways that we kind of cement this in. And you don't realize, I mean, there are obvious ways that I can point to where people use this. And so one of them is, what's Darth Vader's theme? When you see Darth Vader, do you remember what it is? Every time you see Darth Vader in Star Wars, it goes dun 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 dun.
Oh, that's right. Dun, yeah, yeah, dun, yeah.
You know, so,
of course.
Every time you see Leia and Han together, da 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 da. So all of these themes tie people together. I remember reading about this and studying this when I was in music school. Wagner used to do this with Tristan and Isolde. John Williams was brilliant. I mean, every character got a theme. Sometimes a plot line got a theme. And then you go, well, sing the theme for the Avengers. And nobody can remember it or do it. Because music is different in that. And so they don't mm-hmm. use music or sound as much. And I mean, mm-hmm. I could play scenes back and forth where, I could put in different music and you would go, ah, oh, that totally changed it. So sound and music is big. But a lot of people are trying to think of how they can use this for their Facebook videos or their LinkedIn videos or YouTube videos. And a lot of this just to remember at the very beginning of the video, grab attention. So do something that hits that amygdala and flip it. And then from there, you can take it. And you mentioned this, the story arc. A lot of people don't get the story arc. And so when they're writing or you're watching a video, it's almost impossible to watch something without orienting yourself within the story, not just visually, but within the plot line. So you think, I relate to this person, I don't relate to this person. That's where protagonist and antagonist are kind of created. So that's the place where you can, okay, I've got your attention. Now we have to direct it. And I mean, I could do some different things like right now to make you like me or not like me as much. So there's a show called Mr. Robot. Have you ever seen that one?
Yeah.
All right. So they break a lot of rules. So in cinematography, you're supposed to be facing this way. This is called facing.
Yeah.
And it gives you some breathing room in front. But they do scenes where it's this, and he feels boxed in. Yeah. You know, he feels like he's trapped right here against the screen. So they will do just funny things like that. Sometimes they'll have him, he's way down at the bottom of the screen and he's kind of, he's just looking up I'm making myself look goofy, but that's all right. But what happens is each of those things plays into how you like or dislike a person. So one of the best things that I tell people is, make sure you're kind of oriented where your head isn't, chopped off at the top. Some people, you see them and they're like, hey, how's it going? Which just kind of looks a little strange. And you probably don't know why it looks strange, but it does. And all these things play into how people perceive you.
Yeah. The Mr. Robot example is a really good one. And that's a really great series to take a look at because they do break a lot of rules. And I think as it applies to us regular folks who are making videos for our own businesses, there are lessons there from the point of view of, if you start your video and instead of doing this normal thing of I'm, center framed and everything is looking the way, we expect, I do something odd that to break that pattern, I'm going to capture your attention more than if I just show up looking just the normal way. And very simple, I really love the idea of creating a theme. And I've never really thought about this, but the idea that for your brand, for your company, you can start telling stories. And in the stories, like if you have a team, you've got characters. Some of the characters could be your customers. And musically, you could actually create themes so that every time you're talking about your team, that has one thing of music going on. And every time you're talking about your clients or your customers, there's another thing going on. I have to try that out. That's just so great. I love that idea. And
people get as deep in this as you want. I mean, I have known a brand who will remain nameless that when they are talking about the conflict part of their brand, they introduce an 18K tone that you can barely hear. But it's kind of like the Horcrux in Harry Potter. What is always strikingly strange to me is a lot of brands will sink decent amount of energy and money and design skills into a logo, into the look and feel of their website. But then when it comes to a video, they kind of just flake out. They don't think that this is important. And especially, you know, from what you teach live video, it might be the first time somebody sees you. It's might be the first point of awareness for your brand. And I'm just like, this ought to be great. This ought to be as good as you can make it so that it's that nice first impression. And so I'm not saying it has to be, you know, professionally made every time. It doesn't. I mean, with a decent phone and good lighting, you can make yourself look great. In fact, I'd rather have a great lighting package in an iPhone than a really expensive cinema camera with bad lighting.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. Lighting is pretty much everything in addition to audio. And right. What I'm wondering is, like, from what you're saying and sort of how we can be influenced by some of the very best cinematographers in the world and bring some of that skill set and that influence into the videos that we make. I mean, right now, like, even the very best newscasters and the very best, you know, TV hosts, like, I don't know, the Colbert Show and people like that, they've been forced to broadcast from their home studio. And a lot of them have been really challenged by this. And so for all the rest of us, that playing field is pretty level right now. And so if we show up and we start doing things that are, you know, a little more cinematic, a little more influenced with these eye hacking techniques, that can be really attention getting. That could be any number of things. One of the things that I'm really interested in pushing the envelope is this medium right here, doing live video. And how can we do something that's actually live? I mean, early television, all of it was live. You know, people don't remember or think about it too much, but shows like The Ed Sullivan Show, that was a live, basically vaudeville show where people would come out and they do a short act and then they're off and then the next act would come on and you had people spinning plates and you had Topo Gigio, the puppet mouse, and then you had the Beatles, all in the same show. And that was all done live. And of course, in those days, you only had three television channels. So when something big happened, everybody in the whole country was watching one thing. And the challenge now is that there's a gazillion million channels that people can watch, and we don't have big screens. We have little tiny, you know, mobile screens where people are watching this content right here. So the need is even greater to break it up visually and to break it up with storytelling and to break it up, you know, with interesting musical audio. So if you had some eye hacking takeaways for the people who are like, okay, I want to make better video for my company. I want to make better video for the business. I've got a phone. I can go out there and make some next week. What would those takeaways look like?
Well, the biggest is don't feel like you have to reinvent the wheel. You don't have to invent anything. You don't have to, you know, do anything. Everything's already out there. So start with your brand and your brand values. Who you really are. Brand is not a logo, right? It's the impressions that you're trying to create about your business. So start with your brand. And if your brand is targeting, you know, housewives age 30 to 50 who are watching soap operas, look at some soap operas and see how they look. Make it look like that. You want to appeal to your target audience. If your brand is more high end, then, you know, maybe you want to invest in some lighting. And I mean, I started out with construction lights, the kind of, you know, aluminum dome ones with LED bulbs or even halogen bulbs back in the day. And I put wax paper over them. I have to time all of my shots so that the wax paper wouldn't melt and start a fire. So you can do all of this with just minimal effort. And if you can't get lights, get, you know, get the sun and just get a shower curtain to make this light soft and diffuse. But make sure it represents your brand. And wherever your brand is, position-wise already, just look at the visuals that are already around it. You know, if your brand is for high-end video gamers, you need a lot of RGB in the background. You need to change everything up and have it, you know, appealing in that way. If your brand is kind of classy, you know, open and airy, then you don't want to be using, you don't use all the RGB kind of stuff. You'll look like a tryhard. That's a new word my daughter used on me. Dad, don't look like a tryhard. You don't want to try too hard. You want to make it look more effortless in the lighting. So yeah. That's kind of, you know, I've got lights behind my monitors, but I've just got one light. It's, you know, it's right over here and it's shining actually up into the wall and the ceiling. It's just giving me a nice soft lighting. So look at other people who are in the same space and, you know, kind of copy them. But don't copy them too much. You want to be distinctive at the same time. So a lot of people feel like they have to reinvent it and start, you know, from scratch and buy a bunch of stuff. You don't have to do that. Just start trying to do stuff.
That's great. If people want to get a hold of you and perhaps even use your boutique video services, where's the best place for them to go?
Well, I'm obviously here on LinkedIn and Facebook and YouTube, but my website is Knackhaus. It's Knackhaus, which is kind of the German way of saying house. And it's kind of based off of an internal value, which all of my team, we work really hard to find something we really love and are good at. So that's our knack. And the house is just where we gather everybody to do that. So I have a great cinematographer. Met him through Facebook. He's just making videos. And in fact, when he started making videos, the ones I saw were on his iPhone. And they looked so good. And he was just that talented. And so I try to gather people under their knack. So knackhaus.com is a way I can be reached. Paul at knackhaus or info@knackhaus.com, either one of those. Love to talk to people about not just making videos for them, which we love, but helping them make videos for themselves, because a lot of brands just can't afford someone to come in and make all of their videos.
That's cool. So I'll make sure that links to your site are in the show notes. Anybody wants to check in there. And thank you so much for coming on today. This is great.
Thanks, Brad. Thanks for having me.
I wish I was above the center of attention, but I'm not. I wish I didn't have to give in to the pressure, I'm posting pictures, trying to be someone I'm not. It feels just like I'm lying to you. I'm faking stages, trying to live some perfect life. I know I'm wasting time, cause I just wanna call my friends and see what they're doing tonight. It doesn't have to be so special. I try to be myself, you do the same and we'll be alright. Start a conversation with someone. Just be who I am, I care so much about first impressions. So, cause I got a feeling that it could be great. Skip all the acts, not playing games. Maybe ripping and daring me and tell you my name. Cause this pressure. but I'm not. I wish I didn't have to give in to the pressure. Oh.